the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 31. It breezed right past us last week. I didn't even realize that that we were on episode 30 last week. I mentioned nothing about it. Blows my mind that in the last 30 weeks we have gone from just right up around 1,000 to 1,300 subscribers on Facebook to almost 6,000, that we have tripled downloads, that our reach for posts is now like in the 70,000 range whenever we put stuff out and promote it. So thank you guys. That is all because of y'all. You guys are the ones out there sharing the page. Y'all are the ones out there sharing the group. Y'all are the ones out there doing so much for us always. So thank you, listeners, as always, for everything that y'all do, for having the open minds, the open hearts to talk about the discussions that we have, the sometimes uncomfortable discussions. We're going to have a fun discussion this evening at the beginning of the show with Dr. Deborah Lynn Katz. She is actively the head of IRVA, I-R-V-A. IRVA.org is the website, folks. Stop on by, check that out. It is the International Remote Viewing Association. She is the author of the book, The Complete Clairvoyant, which is actually a compendium of three books. You Are Psychic, Extraordinary Psychic, and Freeing the Genie. I bought the compendium because, well, that's what you should do when somebody has three books that are associated and they turn it into a compendium. They kind of want you to have a whole idea of something. So I've gone through and earmarked some stuff here that I've been reading, and we will be getting into that and how clairvoyance is related to remote viewing and exactly what remote viewing is, what IRVA, the International Remote Viewing Association, is all about, as well as their upcoming conference in Menlo Park. I will be going. I am actively holding my printed ticket right here in my hand, folks. Cannot wait to go to this show. It's going to be epic. People like Hal Putoff, stuff like that there, talking about the history of remote viewing, celebrating 50 years of the science and art of remote viewing. And I say science because it is a science. There is a method to this. And we will be talking about that with our guest, Dr. Deborah Lynn Katz, here in just a minute. Before we bring Dr. Katz on, of course, thank you so much to our sponsors, as always. Make sure to stop on by WebWorks Wireless. WebWorks Wireless is your home for high-speed internet for all. WebWorksWireless.com is the website. They help you provide pretty much web anywhere. They have been our streaming sponsor since the beginning of Curious Realm, since the rebrand back in December. And I'm here to tell you, folks, when they say unlimited, no data limit, I put up smooth 20 gigs of video, audio, and other files a month while on the road with my WebWorks wireless system, and it is fantastic. It is what we use to stream to our website every week. WebWorksWireless.com is the website. Stop on by and check them out. While you're online checking them out, of course, make sure to stop on by our other sponsor, The Secret to Everything, the amazing Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. She will be coming on the show here in a couple weeks. I want to say possibly next week to discuss frequency healing, what frequency healing is. Secret to Everything is your source for alternative health frequency healing and consciousness expansion exercise. Stop on by, get your session with Dr. Kimberly McGeorge today. SecretToEverything.com. And of course, while you're online, checking out everything from IRVA.org to secretofeverything.com to webworkswireless.com. Make sure to stop on by curiousrealm.com. That's ours. We're shameless here, folks. CuriousRealm.com is the website. That's where you can go to check out the live stuff. That's where you can go to check out all the episodes. That is also where you can go to follow us on social media. And you know what happens whenever you follow us on social media? You get to catch up with the news of the week in our Curious Realm group. That's right, folks. News of the week is brought to you by our Facebook group. Stop on by and join the Curious Realm group. Bunch of curious folks. Had about 20 people join this week. Today, as a matter of fact, the Large Hadron Collider discovered 3 new exotic particles in physics. That coming to you out of Gizmodo.com, out of thesun.co.uk. Military asked for child-sized coffins for alien bodies after UFO crash. And our good friend Daniel Allen Jones actually knows this researcher, so I'm going to be chatting with him about possibly getting him on the show. At Mediaite.com, Highland Park suspect filmed himself on parade route and posted violent content online ahead of the shooting. Tons of violent content, actually. I was just chatting with our good friend and backup guest, Mike Turber, just a few minutes ago. More Highland Park news, apparently out of the DailyMail.uk, revealed Highland Park shooter was, quote, known to law enforcement. And, of course, the amazing news this upcoming weekend, folks. Make sure to tune in live Saturday and Sunday for our on-site coverage of MUFONCON, the MUFON Symposium, UFOs in the Spotlight, day 1 and 2 this Saturday and Sunday. We will be doing live coverage. My amazing wife, Amy of the Yes But Why podcast, will be there with me. We will be down in the trenches talking to vendors, all kinds of fun things. Interviewing speakers, guests, organizers. Stop on by, check that out. Once again, folks, that is the news of the week. And before we bring in our guest, I want to give a quick shout out to Eric Renamaki. Eric Renamaki, that is the owner of Uperlights.com. Uperlights.com is not a sponsor at all, actually. I'm just shouting them out because I have been having so much geeky fun over the last 2 days. They make these amazing UV flashlights. And if you notice there, it's not just a UV LED. There's actually a UV filter. Now, you may wonder, what is a uperlight? Well, I'm a rocks and minerals freak. It's actively a new mineral that was found by Eric Renamaki and confirmed new mineral found in Michigan. So this is a uperlite. It kind of looks like really smooth, non-shiny granite. Now, what's cool? Watch this, even in light. Yeah, that's awesome. You can see the orange glowing particles in it right there. Pretty sweet stuff. So we just interviewed Eric here in studio a couple days ago, and he gave me the light. He gave me a couple uperlites for my rock collection, and I was like, you know, I've been wanting to start up a UV cabinet, and Eric, I want to tell you, you changed my world, man. Not only did I start up a UV cabinet, I had enough material inside of my own mineral collection to fill a UV cabinet. And I found out because of this. So stop on by. His flashlights are no joke, everybody. This is a free shout out to Uperlights.com. Uperlights.com, Uperlights.com. Stop on by, check them out. If you want a UV flashlight for investigation, for paranormal investigation, for going out and finding Bigfoot markings, scent trail, things like that, Uperlights.com. Hands down, I've got like 3 or 4 shortwave, longwave combo UV flashlights and even lamps. This beats them all like combined. So stop on by and check them out. Our guest today, Dr. Deborah Lynn Katz, she is the author of the compendium, The Complete Clairvoyant. We are going to be talking to her about her work with IRVA, the International Remote Viewing Association. Welcome to the show today. Dr. Katz, how are you?
Yes, I'm great. I'm so happy to be here with you, and I'm just so impressed that you actually read my book. That's so often.
Well, no, granted, don't be so impressed, because even though there's like a whole shelf over here of guest books, and yes, I have read them. I didn't read this whole thing before our interview. Now I've gotten about 80 pages in.
Really? You didn't read all 1,200?
I didn't read all 1,200. I'll be honest with you. And as a remote viewer, you probably saw the fact that I didn't read all 1,200.
I have a feeling. But I appreciate
it. I have a logic behind that, you see, and that's the A. I worked on radio for a while, and it would always break my heart whenever somebody would send a book to my host and he did nothing with it. Like, it sat there, and then he'd be like, oh, you know, I read this thing. I'm like, you did not read that. That thing's been sitting there for 4 days, man. Like, since it arrived, it's been sitting there. You did not read that. So at the least, I try to get 100 pages into somebody's book so that I've got the springboard into the conversation. The rest of our conversation is going to be the book.
Yeah. It reminds me of years ago, I started having communications with George Norrie's producer,
Tom Danheiser.
Yes, Tom. And Tom would invite me to send him a copy of my book.
Yep.
And then we'd talk. And then he'd say, we'd get on the phone, and about a minute and a half later, he'd say, oh, I've got another call. I have to go. And then I wouldn't hear from him for about a year. And then the next year, he'd ask me to send the book again.
Yeah.
The same thing would happen year after year. So that guy must have, even just my first book alone, he must have about 10 copies on a shelf somewhere. And I'm sure he hasn't read them either, but maybe he can start his own bookstore.
Exactly. He could probably upcharge for the fact that they've been sitting on the coast-to-coast shelf, you know?
There you go.
I remember my host used to do a thing called Money Bomb, and he would do things like, this was the microphone that I used on air the first year. How much are we willing to pay, everybody? Like, on-air auction. Like, it was...
You could charge extra for the dust.
Exactly. Hilarious stuff like that. So, but you really do, whenever you're writing things like this, whenever you're getting research, like what you guys do with Irva, you do have to be shameless to some aspect. You really do have to be willing to shoot flares in the air and say, hey, you look at this. Because without that, it may not be received with a lot of fanfare.
Yes. Well, especially like I really appreciate that you were giving a plug for the upcoming Irva conference and that you're going to be there. I'm just so excited that you are going
to. Oh, it's going to be great. I can't wait.
But, you know, there is one requirement to coming, and that's you're going to need to participate in the talent show.
Okay.
So what are you going to do as your...
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll bring some 38 special or something to sing.
That would be good.
Let's see. I could bring a yo-yo. I've got a good routine of probably still a good 10 yo-yo tricks that I can rip out.
That yo-yo tricks would be awesome at this point. It's
nerdy enough. I wish that it was the case that I could see things through envelopes. I'd pull a Kreskin and you know, do my Johnny Carson. But let's go ahead and start kind of cracking the nut, so to speak, and start tearing open the envelope that contains remote viewing. Now, granted, I use that terminology because that was, of course, some of the original practicality that was used in the remote viewing experiments, though with SRI, not quite now. And I remember years ago ordering the videotape from SRI that they would advertise here and there on Coast to Coast AM, stuff like that. Like once a month, they do a thing where it was like, call in and, you know, or mail in and you can get a free copy of the SRI videotape about remote viewing. Find out about the remote viewing program. And to know where it has come to since then, just at that point, that was probably about 20 years ago, honestly. 25 years ago.
That would have been really soon after the programs were disbanded. Yeah. And things just getting started. Irva has been in existence now for 22 years.
Oh, wow.
And then this is really the 50th year anniversary of remote viewing, as far as the government programs were concerned. So they got started in the early 70s. So yeah, that's the theme of the conference this year is 50 years of remote viewing. And yeah, it is really cool to see how things have changed and are transforming. And it really seems like remote viewing is a topic that's just exploding throughout the country and really throughout the world. And that's what we're trying to do right now is just really bring this to all regions of the world and all people in all languages. And I feel like in some ways we're just really still at the beginning stages of all of that. On the other hand, you know, definitely things have progressed a lot in the last 20 years or so.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when it comes to especially a public understanding of remote viewing, I think that yes, you're correct. What we are seeing is literally just the visible iceberg.
Yes.
And what we see, the articles that we see, the things that we see come out, like it blew my wife's mind that when I told her that the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats was based on an actual government program. And she was like, what? I was like, I am not joking. Look it up. It's called remote viewing.
Like, well, and, you know, there are still people who have no idea that there has been any formal research done on psychic abilities. You know, I encounter people still like probably maybe once every other week where someone will say, well, if this stuff is real, why is there no research on it? And it's like, okay, well, there is over 150 years of solid research and at least four journals that have been in existence for decades, if not for, you know, the Journal of Society for Psychical Research has been around since I think 1880. And there has been so much research in all of these areas that it is undisputable and unquestionable. But, you know, what do you do for people who just haven't even, if they haven't looked for the research, and most people haven't, how many people have even looked for articles on COVID? You know, most just listen to the news. They don't go look for the formal published articles.
We really do kind of depend on, and it's interesting that at the MUFON conference this year, the whole concept is UFOs in the spotlight. It is literally the media push right now, and the media push over the last 50 years. And what's up with the pivot? And is the pivot good? Is the pivot okay? Is the pivot good for the community? It's been great for people coming out. People are much braver about coming out and sharing their story of experience, you know, and that is my hope, is that through the work of IRVA, things like that, we're able to get to a better understanding. The one thing that I bring about on this show all the time, Dr. Katz, is the fact that we see literally a slice. It's called the visible spectrum for a reason, because it's only part of the actual electromagnetic spectrum, and a very minute part, like a less than 10% part of the actual spectrum and vibration of this universe is what we can see and hear and process with our brain.
Yes.
Thusly, not that we can't process it with our brain, because, well, sure, vibration. But can we conceptualize the vibration that we are receiving and understand what it is without a knowledge of that ahead of time?
Exactly. There's a lot out there that will just kill us that we can't see, can't smell. Carbon monoxide is one of those things.
Yeah. And
then other energies, there's so much out there that is having an impact on us, and that we, positive and negative, and we just don't see it. And so How do we become aware of it? And how do we work with it to enhance our lives and grow as people and advance the human race? Yeah. And that's really what these topics are all about.
Well, and that's just it. You really do have to be open minded with the research. You have to be open minded enough to do the research. B, to even think that there may have been research done, because like you're saying, just the United States Parapsychological Association is from the 1800s. It's well over 100 years old. There have been scientific studies and measurements taken. Like, good God, it was the 1910s or 15s when the study on the weight loss of people upon death was done. You know?
Yeah.
These things have been quandaries since science began, and are quite literally the root of half of our science.
Well, and unfortunately, there really have been entire movements designed against letting this information out. For example, William James, who is still referred to as the father of psychology, he was very interested in these topics, pretty much obsessed. And he was an early member and founder of the Society for Psychical Research in the UK. And yet most of the time, his work with studying mediums and advancing many of these topics, it was so important to him at the time. And at the time, everyone knew what he was involved in. But then after some decades, that aspect of his work and other early psychologists' work just kind of disappeared, like as if it was just kind of cut out of the conversation. It's really interesting to see how that happened. So his other work was accepted and continues to be talked about, but it's very hard to find a mention of his work in just, you know, mainstream, like introductory psychology textbooks. And in fact, if you read a lot of introductory psychology textbooks, you find very derogatory statements about psychic, anything having to do with psychic abilities, and very uninformed and very ill-researched mentions of these topics. And it's really just pretty appalling to find out how many psychologists are handling these topics. And, you know, that's some of it's just accidental, but these are the same psychologists that are promoting critical thinking and how people really need to, you know, do diligent research. So it's very contradictory and it's problematic because millions of people go to college and they're required to take these psychology classes. So that's just one of many examples where people, you know, that would be the prime place to start to introduce them to this research. And so I think it really starts there with doing a better job of educating undergraduates.
Oh, sure. And I mean, even, you know, like you're saying, to let them know that things like Project Stargate, like what I'm bringing up on screen right now, actively existed, where they were trying to find ways to utilize this literal biological technology. Let's start with this, because I think this is a good springboard for us to start giving remote viewing a definition. We've used a lot of, I think, kind of nebulous terms that are interchangeable between clairvoyant communities, new age communities, things like that, energies, frequencies. And I think that that is, of course, key to understanding the root of what remote viewing is, and the principle of how it's done, is to understand that all things happen on an equal basis. All things happen past, present, future at the same moment. Otherwise, you couldn't move fluidly from one to the other. You and I, despite being separated by a distance and on a Skype audio line right now, are sharing an electron field.
Yes.
By all rules of physics. The microphone in front of me is not physically there. What I'm touching is an electronic repulsion of atoms. That's what I'm feeling. But yet still, because I'm 90% empty space, I can still perceive. So that's a lot of, just to give y'all a quick brush over of the substructure. But once again, that leaves a lot of people with the idea of, well, that sounds like ESP. But what specifically is remote viewing? What is it used for? And what is the process of remote viewing, Dr. Katz?
Yes, very good questions. And, you know, you really can call me Deborah.
Sure.
I appreciate that you call me Dr. Katz, but feel free to call me Deborah. And so remote viewing, many people say, well, isn't remote viewing just your psychic abilities? And you could say yes on one level. And some people will use the term interchangeably with clairvoyance or sure. just being able to perceive information at a distance. But those that are engaged in remote viewing, particularly within the historical context of the government programs that used it and developed it, in this context, it's being used as you could define it. Well, Ingo Swann, who was very essential to the programs and helped develop training programs in remote viewing, he defined it as a design or a protocol in which psi or your psychic abilities are used. But it's a protocol, one that there's different protocols, but overall there's a few main components to it, which is really using your psychic abilities in a careful way so that you can rule out other explanations, such as your logic is a big one, or using a protocol where you can carefully analyze the information that has come in and then comparing it to feedback or to data that you receive later. And so a lot of times remote viewing is done within a structure where it can be done just by one person by themselves. Like I could go and look online for a target. Like even I have a on remoteviewing.net, I have a target practice site. And if I wanted to, I could just click on a number, like target number one for locations, and spend some time doing some simple procedures and getting information, images, ideas, words, sketches. I could sketch on a piece of paper. And then I could go back and click on the link and look to see how well my sketches and words match the actual photograph or location. And so I could do that. But in this, like, it's already been set up that someone had set these targets up, and that allows me to remain blind. In this case, I had an assistant set up the targets, and most of them, so I wouldn't really remember what location number 21 or 42 would be.
Sure.
But it, a lot of times it then is a bit more of a complex structure than just like sitting there and saying, I'm going to look at something. So for example, if I was just going to use my psychic abilities or my clairvoyance because I wanted to describe what's happening with COVID, which I did at the start of COVID in January 2020, I wanted to understand, like, what is this? I want to understand the structure. I want to understand, how is this spread? How is this affecting people? What might help in terms of developing a vaccine? I already knew I had these questions in mind and I wanted to explore them. So all I really did was sit down and close my eyes and do some simple mental approaches and get information. I'd call sure. that using my clairvoyance. But if I wanted to set it up in terms of like a more formal remote viewing project, I would like to probably task viewers blindly, blind meaning, which is a scientific term. So remote viewing yeah. oftentimes is considered more scientific. And I would create a structure where I could give an assignment to people without them even knowing it was COVID, just assign like a target number, random target number, give them the number and say, I want you to just tune in to the secret question that's connected with this target number, and whatever comes to mind, write it down and sketch. And then later we could take what they came up with and compare it to the known data. And so that's really, in a nutshell, like how remote viewing would maybe differ from just like regular clairvoyance. It still is using your psychic abilities, but it's just using it in a more structured, careful way with levels of blinding a lot of times and sometimes separation of roles.
Sure. Now with that, I would have to ask you to pause and answer a couple of questions. Number one, would that presuppose the fact that somebody has to A, be clairvoyant? And does that mean that we're all clairvoyant?
Yes, we are all clairvoyant, or we all have that ability. It's just really like a muscle that you have to practice. And a lot of people just have absolutely no idea where to even get started. Mm. So that's something that I specialize in, because I barely, until I was about 27 or so, I barely had ever had like what I would call a vision. I had maybe three, apart from like dreams, but waking only a few. And I had no idea that it was possible for me to have that. And then I learned some simple techniques that really worked, and then just kept honing that, and then took what I learned and tweaked it a bit and started teaching others. And that was close to 25 years ago. So now I would say that just about anybody that spends time with it, they are going to have a level of success. It's really about working with some simple visualizations and practicing a lot. A lot of people never even practice visualizing. And so it's moving to that part of yourself and just learning some simple approaches, and then having to work with it. You know, it's not like you're going to sit down. You might like get a lot of images right away when you first get started with these techniques, but it'll take longer, like for the meaning and understanding to come through. And it's a process where you have to keep focusing. You lose your focus, you refocus, you move it around. It has a lot to do with your attention and perceptual, your internal perceptual abilities and ability to focus and refocus and manage your emotions when they come up and they want to just like have you run away or do something else. So there's a lot of like managing your internal emotional self as sure. you're going through these techniques. But yes, well, everybody has them.
I was going to say, I'm sure it's very much like, cause I did dream work for a long time. And what I mean by that is, going to sleep with intent.
Yes.
I would go to sleep with, the idea that I will walk down a path tonight, and while I walk down that path, I will look for answers to the question that I have.
That's a fantastic. And, did you find you'd
be successful? Most definitely. Now, the reason I bring that up is because I didn't do my dream work for a long time, and now it's a very sore muscle. It's a lot harder for me to get into that state. It's a lot harder for me to silence what the Buddhist monks call the monkey mind. Basically that, ooh, shiny. you know, that moment of, oh, I'm relaxing on the plane now. My God, did I leave the iron on? Dude, you don't own an iron. You know, like how, and that's a hard part to begin with is number one, yes, learning to silence that, but, how close and necessary is the out of body experience to remote viewing? Because I could see how, because of the scientific nature of remote viewing, and when I say the scientific nature, because when the process of remote viewing was first developed, it was developed in a lab situation. It was developed for, we need a repeatable process, and we need a process where if we get 7 results out of 10 that are the same, we know that these are individual.
Yes.
You know, we know that this person wasn't talking to a person through an air vent. We know that they weren't communicating in any way, shape, or form. We know that they weren't communicating about it, and that nobody involved with the testing was communicating with them. You know, a full-on scientific process, as opposed to like a group of people getting together on a Wednesday night at you know, Carl's house, and we're all gonna like transport to Mars today, folks. You know, which I'm not going to say it in a Mars remote viewing session.
Sure. Yes.
But is it the scientific means where you have gone through and you've journaled it and you have all of the data there? You know, no, it's not the same thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, so remote viewing really had its origins even before the like Russell Targ and Hal Puthoff and others started the program at the Stanford Research Institute. Even before that, Ingo Swann was working, he was invited to work with researchers at the American Society for Psychical Research in New York. And Carl Oasis and Janet Mitchell were involved in trying to understand or trying to find out if someone could intentionally leave their body and go up above the body to a shelf that would be located about 8 to 10 feet above a bed and describe the objects on the shelf. So they were really researching out of body experiences and then the ability to access information or see objects when out of the body. That was really how it all started. And Ingo Swann was their main subject, and he would often do a very good job describing what was on the shelf. Now, at first he like the first week or two, he was kind of off, and they would just like test different conditions, like they would put different lights up there to see if he could see like better if they put a brighter light up on top. And he was strapped to a bed, by the way, so it wasn't like he could cheat or get up, because he was having all his vital signs monitored and they could see him through a glass room in the other room. And he started to, with repeated attempts and making some adjustments to how he was doing things, he started to get better and better descriptions to the point of being extremely detailed. And there's what I think of as an iconic photo now in one of his books called, I think it was called The Reality of ESP. That was Russell's book. One of Ingo's books on with the word ESP in it first published this photo of where there was a 7-Up can that was placed on the shelf 10 feet above him. And he drew a picture. And when he first looked at the picture, it made no sense. And he thought he had done a bad job. And then someone took the picture. He had sketched this and it was green. But what it turned out to be was an upside down 7-Up can with the word 7-Up. So it looked like hieroglyphics or something upside down. And then when they turned the page right side up, it was absolutely the word 7-Up on a shape like a can with the color.
As though he'd been viewing it from the ceiling.
Yes, from the ceiling upside down, to the point that he consciously did not, you know, he didn't know what it was.
He couldn't differentiate the two.
Yes. So that showed him from a particular position. And it also showed him that it's possible to get information subconsciously, because he was awake when he was doing this, but he just didn't like understand what it was. So there was like this divide between what his conscious mind was understanding and what his subconscious mind was doing, which is really so typical when we're doing psychic work. And also it was significant to them, to him and Janet Mitchell, that with time and practice, he was getting better and better, because that was something too that they really just believed that maybe someone had this gift or didn't, and they didn't really even at first realize it was something to be developed. So they weren't even giving him like feedback, or it used to be pretty common to not even tell psychic subjects like what their feedback was or how they were doing. They just have them do like, you know, 200 trials and be on their way, and not say like, hey, this is what we were having you work with. And so they realize like the power of feedback. Like if you draw something and then you get to see the object and you get to compare it and look at what did you do well and what did you not do so well, that you can make adjustments. So this is something that you could learn. So much came out of that. And they were really the ones who coined the term remote viewing. And then when Ingo went over to work with the researchers at the Stanford Research Institute, which is going to be like half a block from where we're, I'm going to have our conference this year.
Wow.
That's why we're going back there this year with the 50th year anniversary of remote viewing. We actually wanted to do the conference in SRI, but it's really top high security right now. And we just could not get in there. So we're as close as we can be without being there.
Interesting. That's awesome. And I can't wait to be at the conference once again, to know that the research itself has been going on for 50 years. And that, I think that is, it's one of the things that we talk about on this show regularly, Deborah, is the religion of science.
Yes.
And how hard it is to, I identify as a Roman Catholic. I was a Roman Catholic seminarian. And the one thing I tell people all the time is never forget, the church is literally the world's oldest political organization. They take forever to change. And there's a reason that they take forever to change. And don't really like practice anything like that. That's just a part of my psyche that I identify with. Now, I see science very much the same way, which is why I say the religion of science, because so often we hear scientists saying like, no, that can't be. It's like, well, that's funny, because until about 500 years ago, the Earth couldn't be round.
Yeah.
Like you would be burned at the stake, Deborah. You would be excommunicated. You would be like driven out of your village for witchery to say otherwise. Science was slow to change. It took us 500 years to get to the point. It took us a lot longer than that to get to the point of Magellan going, you know what? I'm doing it. Mm-hmm. I'm taking some. Who's with me?
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, there's that 80-20 ratio of there's 20% that are willing to ford that creek, that are willing to put their years of research on the line. Because like you said, one of the original researchers, half his research was normal psychological work, renowned psychological work. Not in the world of parapsychology, not in that world at all. But the rest of his work that is not in the world of that, though done the same scientific way, utterly ridiculed.
Yes.
So it can be hard for somebody to scientifically want to get involved with these things, to scientifically want to take on the concept of clairvoyance, of connection beyond, of literally, once again, the idea of there is no past or future. It is all now.
Well, and it does really get into peer pressure. And
oh, sure.
Fear, it, you know, it all boils down to fear of what others think and what they might do to one's career or to one's life or social structure. It really boils down to that. But, you know, you asked a question and I kind of pushed us over into another topic. But I think your question was really important, like the relationship between out-of-body experiences and remote viewing. Because even though it did come out of the out-of-body research, they ultimately concluded, well, I say ultimately concluded, you know, scientists want to be really careful about making definitive statements. And so there were still many, even as remote viewing progressed, that would say, well, we can't prove for sure that someone's actually leaving their body. Although I think that that example with the 7-Up can is a pretty, pretty good example of where we could really say that that is leading us to think that he really was in a different position.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, but there's a lot of times where you can't be sure if a person is out of their body or not, but you can be sure that they are receiving data. And there are some remote viewers that, like, they feel like they're not going anywhere. They're just sitting in, especially ones that have learned the approach of controlled remote viewing, where they just have a piece of paper in front of them and they just feel like the information's coming through the paper. Mm-hmm. However, I do, I myself and what my students do and many viewers is we do like to imagine that we're going over to a different location. And at times we will have experiences where, you know, we're not just like getting images or ideas or thoughts, but we're actually feeling something like, you know, wind in your hair or sun on your face. Or I had a target where I was suddenly, I was like on the ground wearing a suit of armor and had swords in my chest. Like that was, I had that whole vision from like the perspective of lying on the ground with my armor. And it was the weirdest thing because I was just sitting in my room with the paper. And then suddenly, I was transported and saw these things sticking out of my chest, but it didn't hurt. But that gave me an idea that this was some kind of medieval target. And sure enough, it turned out to be a medieval castle. So, you know, viewers themselves will have these experiences where they will say, yeah, like in that moment, I did feel like there was more of my energy or my consciousness at a distance. But then a lot of times it won't feel like that. And there are some ways to kind of tell, like if you're just working with what I call two-dimensionally on just on your paper with data coming in there, or where you're having more of this full body integrative experience at the location. So I think both are going on. And then of course, many times when people are having out of body experiences, they will be able to see things. They will be able to see like their friend's house or car or whatever is happening at that time. So there is, and that, you know, they're probably inclined to say, oh, it seemed like I was remote viewing. They were definitely at least being clairvoyant at that moment.
Yeah. Or at least, you know, a form of bilocation or receiving data through another channel.
Yes.
Than typical. And with that in mind, I kind of want to, I know that we've only got you for a few more minutes. My God, the conversation has literally just flown by, Deborah. But I think that One thing that is really important for people to understand is chapter 7 of your book here, which is actually the book You Are Psychic. I'm reading from The Complete Clairvoyant, which is the trilogy of books. But I think that this is an important aspect to remote viewing as a whole, which is grounding. In addition to securing you to the earth and harnessing your energy, grounding is a very powerful and effective means of releasing negative energy or energy that is no longer serving you, as in the cause of pain, anxiety, stress, unwanted thoughts, etc. And that is like what we were saying, getting rid of that monkey mind, getting rid of the busy thoughts in your head, that kind of stuff. But what are some ways that people can begin to ground themselves? Because it's a harrying world that we live in. And it's even more harried since the reboot from COVID, and it's even more stressed out than what it used to be. Some might say that is by design. What have you? The fact is, we're in the midst of it. So for the average person out there that is not the adept that you are, or is not even the dream explorer that I once was and am hoping to rebuild the muscles to get back to, how can they begin learning to ground themselves? And when to learn, more importantly, that they are grounded or that they are losing their grounding?
Yes, well, I'm glad you asked that, because it is a really helpful technique and concept. So just anyone listening right now can just do this. Just close your eyes for a moment and visualize your body. And I like to ground from the first chakra, or the base of the spine. You could think of it as your hip area. And you could think of it like you're just anchoring your whole lower body into the earth. You could think of it as a column of energy, but I like to use a solid object that I visualize, like a tree trunk or a pole or just something really super solid. You can even imagine your own legs going straight down into the ground and just anchoring deep into the earth. And I also like to visualize then my energy field around me, and just imagining like it can stretch out wide or come in close. So kind of just like you can put your arms out wide or hug them to your body, you can do that with your field. And then I'll just kind of ground the bottom of my field or aura, just trusting that it's there. So this isn't like, oh, I can totally see with my eyes open my field. I'm just trusting that I have this thing called an energy field, and I'm connecting it into my ground cord. And then I'm going to use the cord to both release, like if I feel stressed out, I'll say, what's the energy of stress? What does that look like? And then it's really through using your imagination, like, oh, stress to me looks like something dark and kind of fuzzy. Okay, I'm going to send that down my grounding cord. Or I'm having a really discouraging thought right now, like I'm feeling very negative. What does that, if I had to give that thought a color or a look to it, maybe it's like goopy kind of gray color. And then I'm going to, where is that thought? Oh, I think it's just like in the middle of my head. I'm going to just visualize that pouring down my body, pouring down my grounding cord into the earth. So it's just techniques like this that, and then you could use it as a whole meditation, like just doing that for 1 minute might be enough. But you could have that as be your central focus of a meditation, where if you sit there for 10 minutes, even 20 minutes, and all you do is just focus on your grounding. And then when you get distracted, recenter your thoughts and just let any distractions go. It makes up a really powerful meditation. Yeah. And you could pair it with other like running energy or other approaches that I talk about in the book, especially in You Are Psychic, of or the which is by itself or within the complete clairvoyant. Mm. But these have changed my life, and they have made it so that I and so many others can deal with so much more in life. Yeah. And then, you know, again, it helps. These are all starting exercises to then use with any kind of psychic modality where you do need to be able to get centered and release like the performance anxiety or all the distractions. And it gets your visualization muscles going as well.
Well, and the one thing that came to my mind immediately, because the one that I love my wife, but she is a little too Bostonian at times, with her negativity and reality, you know, as she would say, yucking my yum. As I tell her, I'm busy trying to manifest stuff over here. You want to not like commingle reality with what I'm trying to make reality? cause you're kind of jamming up the frequencies right now, you know, but how important is that grounding to proper result when you're talking about, remote viewing? Because even with manifestation, though, once again, the tainting of result, One dose of negativity is like it takes 100 doses of positivity to bring it back to ballast, you know. It's 10 times as strong. So how can, and this is just before somebody go, because the one thing I always ask whenever we talk to people about out of body experience specifically is, what do people need to do to protect themselves? I don't want to discourage anybody from exploration here or beyond or within themselves or their connection to the beyond. However, there are caveats that are out there. There are things that you need to be careful for, you know, and if you're looking for specified result in something, and looking for a repeatable result, you really do need to have control over that as much as possible, which means like, yeah, any negativity from your job during the day might be hazing your result. What can people do to make sure that their session is right and good, despite the world going on around them?
Well, it definitely helps to meditate in advance of doing sessions. Whether you're grounding yourself, you're bringing your energy back to yourself, because that's the big thing, is a lot of people have no idea of how spread out their own awareness, energy, consciousness is. Like they come home from work, but they're still completely plugged into work.
Yeah.
You know, they're completely plugged in. It's like they're doing 1,000 things all at once, even when their physical body is somewhere else. And it's hard not to do that. But there's also other techniques where you could visualize like all of your energy coming back to your body and visualize yourself unplugging from all these different things and people and negative things too, like even just, you know, the TV set, the negative media and sure. social media where all our energy is so often. And so it does take like some conscious work to call oneself and consolidate oneself. There's some people that are so spread out, like they don't know if they're coming or going. They can't keep track of anything. Their whole life is a mess. And a lot of times you find it's really about, it's an energy problem. I used to be really bad with this, which is why I now teach about it. And I still can have my moments. I still have to use these tools, you know, so I don't just like, you know, fly off into other places. But there's a lot that people can do. And when you start to consolidate yourself, then you're able to better focus. And so it's really like, you could call it energy maintenance, maintaining sure. your space, having awareness. And, but also, you know, I would just say like living a clean life, like don't, even though, you know, we can, my husband too is, you know, he can go to having like, some kind of pessimistic thinking, but, you know, overall, it's like, you want as much as you can to surround yourself with happy people, with positive people, with people that are not doing a lot of drugs or a lot of substances. And you want to feel good. You need to like wake up and feel good about your environment and surroundings. And I know that can be hard for some people, especially when they don't have a lot of money. But, you know, that's where it's like you can always change your situation through directing your thoughts in a positive manner and, you know, get out of bad situations. Yeah. And it's going to make it so you can more safely use your psychic abilities. You know, it's about really about your environment first.
Yeah, absolutely. Because it is what you surround yourself with and who you surround yourself with that you exude when you go around other people.
Yes.
You know, and it took me a long time to realize that the same way that I felt things when I walked in a room, that was utterly reverse. Like I was stepping into the pool, which meant that like I was pushing a wave toward them too. You know?
Yeah.
That meant that anything negative from my life that I'm dragging with me, any regrets for no good reason, you know, that kind of stuff, anything that I'm foolishly holding on to, I'm making them accountable for now.
Yeah.
By simply walking into the room and bringing that energy around them, you know?
Well, especially if you're in that moment, if you're like super angry or super stressed, emotional state, you don't have to say anything, but they can just feel it. And, you know, so, you know, not to make people, because some people are so worried about like, oh my gosh, if I'm not in the perfect state, I better just stay home. But, you know, it's, and not that, but it's just really, a lot of people don't realize that there is a large degree of control we can get over our thoughts, at least. And, you know, sometimes we have to like go through great lengths to pull ourselves out of certain emotional states.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
We're not gonna totally be able to always do that. But, you know, there's, rather than just like saying, well, there's nothing I could do about it, I'm just like stuck feeling this way or thinking this way, it's like, no, go, you know, go read a book by someone who thinks differently, you know, or go do something that, you know, is at least brings you a little bit more joy. Yeah. You know, none of this, our thinking and our emotional states do not happen by accident. I mean, they can, but we can change that accidental and get so much more control of them.
Yes. And my God, yes. The way I describe it to people, Deborah, is at some point while you were digging a hole, you forgot to start digging at an angle.
Yes.
And you were so busy digging your hole and so preoccupied making this perfect hole, be it a perfect hole of depression, sadness, whatever made you comfy and made you feel whole in the moment, or made you feel right with yourself and made you feel able to deal with that moment. Now suddenly you're looking up and there's just a hole and no ramp. And that's really, really high. And it you may not be able to reach the lip first jump. So you got to figure out a way to dig a ramp out. You got to figure out a way to literally dig yourself out of that hole. And that's hard.
That it's really hard. And fortunately, there is oftentimes someone who can pull us out, you know, even if it's just someone who's written something, even a blog post might, you know, help. Sure. Or just knowing that other people are in their holes as well. And, you know, that's not to say that you're just going to snap your fingers and, you know, come out of like grief or, you know, especially for people that lose loved ones, and you know, people just go through such horrible things, and you know, sometimes it's not fair to just suggest like, oh, you know, you're just gonna be able to wipe away that pain.
Oh, just get over it.
No, but but you know, they're like, at some point it's like, okay, well, do I just keep sitting home by myself, like, you know, reminiscing about what I've lost? Or do I, you know, pull myself to collect everything up in me that says, I don't want to go out today. And instead, no, I'm, you know, go out, hang out with people, even if initially a big part of you doesn't be there, but, you know, just doing whatever you can so that you have a chance of even starting to climb up, you know, just like you're building a foothold one at a time.
Yeah, and that first foothold is definitely, you know, figuring out at which point you started identifying with your pain instead of identifying with you.
Yes.
You know, when did that pain become your identifier? When did it become the fact of I am this instead of I am that? And our world, once again, our haptic and hectic world that we live in of technology, I think is a fantastic thing. Number one, it has brought communities out and brought communities together in numerous ways that otherwise had very little chance for being able to be there together, support each other, things like that. My last point that I want to talk about in your book here is technology for connecting with clients. So you're talking about multiple ways to connect and, you know, Skype, things like that. Now, granted, that is in a therapeutic sense. However, how important is it to utilize technology when it comes to remote viewing and to stay on top of technology and to keep yourself abreast of the latest ways to relax stress, to get to that point faster?
Well, these days, there are so many great communities of remote viewers, like Facebook groups, different organizations like IRVA, or there's the Applied Precognition Project that is a community of people that are using psychic abilities to like make future predictions of like financials and sports and horse racing. And that's a topic I just wrote another book on, Associative Remote Viewing, the Art and Science of Predicting Outcomes for Sports and Finances and Elections and the Lottery.
Wow.
And that's my latest book that you'll probably hear about at the IRVA.
You're just ready for Back to the Future 2 to happen all over the place, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's my life. I'm living Back to the Future too. In the war. But to get to your question, let's see your question.
Technology.
Yes. So these days people are operating just like every other realm. You know, we've found that it's so important to be able to communicate with people on Skype, on Zoom, to be that work can now be conducted at a distance. And, you know, a lot of times there's a question of, well, what's lost in that, in not being able to have that face-to-face communication, which is why we do need to, you know, definitely get together in person. But the nice thing about communicating at a distance through our technology is it allows with our psychic abilities to cut down on the things that we don't need. So, for example, in remote viewing, if you want to remain blind to a topic, it could be easier doing that, not getting like visual cues, not getting extra information that could happen. You could be exposed to more information when you're together in person. And so being at a distance already helps you, because if you're together and for example, like let's say a group of people are together and they want to do a remote viewing exercise. Well, let's say the leader of the event that they have to, I'm picturing Russell Targ because he loves to do this, like what's the object in a box, in the box. So he has to get the items, has to hide them, has to make sure that the people in person aren't seeing what's in the box.
Yeah.
But if you're doing this at a distance, like when I teach remote viewing classes, you know, in 2 seconds, I could tell my students, hold on, run around my house, grab something for them to describe, and then take a picture of it while they're doing their session and then show them a picture of it. I know they haven't like seen me over in the corner, stick something in the box. You know, I was able to choose anything in my house. It's just easier that way. And the same thing with what another modality of that I do separate from remote viewing is reading people, reading and healing clairvoyantly. And people will say to me like, oh, like first they think we need to be on video. And I'll say, well, I don't want to be on video with you because part of the goal of being at a distance is where I don't want like visual cues. Yep. I don't want to see facial expressions. I don't want to like be tainted by like my own stereotypes of seeing a person. I just want like the minimal of, you know, give me your name and I'm going to tune into you and see what comes up and not have all those distractors. So because of that, I think technology is great for what we're doing here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When it comes to Zoom, things like that, the fact that you can have a mass session across the country with ease, you know, and be able to record it, that kind of stuff. The gathering of data for research like that is fantastic and amazing. So in that right, in the fact of, as far as continued research in the field of psychic energy, clairvoyance, psychic ability, I don't think that there is any field other than remote viewing that has done it continuously.
Yes, and there are so many people like developing research projects and games and apps that collect data, you know, where you can have like millions of people, like the Institute for Noetic Sciences, Dean Reed, he has different psychic projects going, and some are involve remote viewing. Some are just like hit the button when you have a feeling that you're going to see red or blue, and then they tally that up, like how many times you're correct. With your prediction or just like your hand hitting the space key, but they have like millions of trials, that they can collect and, you know, thousands and thousands a month. Whereas that in the past, you know, just to the expense involved, the time involved to just have to bring somebody into a room and have them do these trials and tests would just.
Oh, yeah.
So long. But of course there, you know, there are some downsides to that. You know, if you're just going to have a whole bunch of people do like a self test with remote viewing, a lot of times they are not like, they may not necessarily be like really well enough dialed into the target. Sure. They might be doing too many trials at once. They might be not like, I tend to with different, like one app, RV tournament where the creator Michael Fiera, he's going to be at the IRVA conference. Ooh. But I'll sometimes go onto his app RV tournament. I really like it, but whereas normally I might take like 30 minutes to do a remote viewing session on like a photograph, for his app, like I get impatient and I just want to see like my results right away, and so I might only take like 20 seconds.
Yeah, the cooling response of having a device in your hand takes over.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that expectation of result and the mouse bang of like, I clicked, why isn't it happening? You know?
And then there's a phenomenon called displacement where like if you're doing like 10 trials, like let's say a trial is you get a photograph and you describe the photograph, but let's say like you just are in a hurry and you want to go through like 10 in an hour, like there's such a good chance that one, you're not even going to be dialed in good enough, yeah. or two, like instead of seeing the next photo, you'll see the photo two trials later or three trials later, like everything will just start to merge together. Yeah. So with these are just examples of where the results are going to start to go down if the level of care is not taken as it like would typically be either in an in-person experiment or at least one that's like really being carefully controlled. And so you'll find with some of these apps that the overall stats are not that impressive. You know, they're not, sure. The results are not nearly as impressive when this work is done like in a careful manner. So that is one downside to the doing it from the technological standpoint.
Oh, sure. And I mean, I actively had a I still have a Muse Brainwave headset, is a really, really neat tool. If you don't have one, you should check into it. I started having migraines, things like that, and anxiety attacks in my sleep. And at the time was spending 35, 40 weeks a year on the road, you know, so it became worrisome to me. And I got this so that, I could start recording my brain waves at least first thing in the morning. So I had one app that recorded my screen. And then I did this with another app that just read my brain waves while I was doing it. And both of those were being recorded. Now, the Muse Brainwave headset, you choose your background and it'll just give you the background sound of like an ocean with waves or a tropical rainforest or a city street. And while you listen to that, you'll start hearing birds chirp. And the louder and the more frequent the birds chirp, the more distracted and unfocused on your breathing you are.
Really? So it's like a biofeedback?
Yeah. And the newer versions actively give you like your O2 level. They'll give you your heart rate, but it gives you all an active readout of your session. And you can choose the time of your session. I was doing like 5-minute sessions. It would tell you how long you were in focus, how long you spent in this level of brain activity. It would actively map all 5 brain waves for the whole session. Then it gave you a little spot for a journal entry.
Wow. I would love to try that. Like
it's like a $200 item. Not even joking.
I'm going to have to
I'll bring it with me.
Oh, that would be awesome.
I'll bring it with me and I'll let you play around with it and see it because it's pretty remarkable. It's pretty interesting. And it got to where, you know, just as far as being able to get to a zone rapidly again, you know, being able to get to a point of relaxation and calm now. It's something that I used to be able to do whenever I was doing my dream work, things like that. And once again, it is a muscle that's gone. I've over years and years just kind of not flexed it and don't have it the way that I used to. So yeah, tools like that are amazing. It's great. The technology that is out there and available now, to help out with things like that. And even to, there's one that they make. A newer version that I'm thinking about getting that's actually like a sweatband that you can put on and like record a whole session while you're asleep. And record your brain waves and your heart rate and your respiration while you're asleep. So it's basically like doing a sleep study while you're at home.
Yeah, that's amazing. Really? You could just do that on yourself.
Yeah, I mean, that is an item fully available on Amazon.
Wow.
Like you can go to Amazon and purchase it right now. And it just amazing to know that like at one point that was a lab-based piece of technology.
Yes.
You had to go somewhere like SRI to be hooked up and have you know, a proper brainwave analysis done.
Oh yeah, and it might cost like $40,000. Yeah. I mean, for a cheap piece of equipment.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, it was definitely like somebody's job to do like two sessions of those a day with patients. You
yeah.
know? And to know that now I can literally get that data and get, cause that was my thing, was recording it and giving it to my doctor and at least going like, hey, I had an anxiety attack in my sleep last night and woke up with a migraine. Here's my brain waves and here's a baseline from the 7 days before.
Wow. Like,
at least I can provide my doctor with some data, not just here's an anecdotal story of what's been happening to me. Here's some literal invaluable data.
Yeah. But otherwise, they're going to have no idea what's wrong.
Yeah,
with
it's stabbing in the dark. And yeah. It's interesting to know that even now, scientifically, with research into whenever you go back and look at movies like Superhuman by Caroline Corey, and the research that she did in that and showing the powers of the mind. Over physical space.
Yeah.
And to know that, yes, our government spent and spends millions, not just researching this, but using it and utilizing it, that corporations spend millions utilizing it. It's pretty incredible to know that, organizations like IRVA are out there and on the forefront of this research. So thank you so much for everything that you guys do.
Well, thank you for just the opportunity to get the word out. And
oh, anytime and all the time.
Yeah, that they can participate. So yeah, I am so excited to see you at the conference.
Same.
And there will be an online portion with its own program and own fun evening activities, too, for people who can't make it in person. So if people want to just go to irva.org, and then at the top, there's the icon or the picture to click for the conference. That would be great. And then if anyone would like to get in touch with me personally, they can go to my website at deborahkatz.com. I've also got some classes coming up. IRVA is going to be sponsoring some classes through their new education program, but then I also have my own classes through the International School of Clairvoyance, and we'll be starting a new semester in September if anyone is interested.
Wow. I cannot thank you enough for your time today, Deborah. Deborah Katz, the author of The Complete Clairvoyant, a compendium, a trilogy of You Are Psychic, Extraordinary Psychic, and Freeing the Genie. She is currently the head of IRVA, the International Remote Viewing Association. Their conference is coming up in Menlo Park, California. I will be there. You should be there too, folks. Come on by. Check out the latest in remote viewing research from the leaders in the field of remote viewing. Dr. Katz, thank you so much once again for your time this evening. I'm going to go ahead and let you go while we go out to commercial. I would love to talk with you tomorrow, as we were discussing earlier. So,
yeah.
I will definitely be in touch, and I greatly look forward to meeting you at the conference and hearing about all the amazing new research out there in this field.
Well, thank you so much, and have a wonderful time at the MUFON conference in Colorado.
Fun.
That's going to be awesome. You're so lucky to just be going to all of these conferences. So
you know, it's funny because last month I spent 24 days in a row on the road for work, doing corporate AV, things like that. And to literally today, my wife's birthday, she's out in the front room right now.
Tell her happy birthday.
Absolutely. And I was like, she was like, wow, you know, I'm looking, because we've both been looking forward to MUFON as well. We're going like a day and a half early, so we're going to have all kinds of fun just going around and seeing things. And I was like, you know what's wild? I'm on the road 24 days this month, but not for other people. All of it for Curious Realm. And that is going to MUFON, going to your conference, going to Comic Palooza in Houston, and speaking there. So yeah, it is all about what you put out there, people. It's all about vibration. You got to do it. You got to put a step forward, and at some point, you got to start digging at an angle.
Yep.
So,
great.
Thank you so much for your time once again. I'm going to go ahead and let you go. While you are online, everybody, checking out everything from our amazing guests, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. We will be right back after these messages, and we will be demystifying SCOTUS. Our amazing legal correspondent, J.L. Carpenter of J.L. Carpenter Attorneys at Law, will be talking to us about SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, exactly what SCOTUS is, oddly enough, right after Independence Day. It didn't even dawn on me when I pre-recorded this with her that it would be right after Independence Day. And what a proper time to talk about the Constitution and what the Constitution is and what the job of the Supreme Court is specifically and what lays that out in the Constitution and what their recent decisions mean. So we will be getting into that and so much more right after these messages, folks. With the rise in attention to the health benefits of cannabis and cannabinoids, including CBD, True Hemp Science has become one of the premier providers of full-spectrum CBD and CBD-related products. Using a proprietary spigeric process, True Hemp Science extracts maximum benefit from the whole hemp plant. Buds, leaves, stems, seeds, even roots. Every part of the plant is used and then reused to formulate a rich, complex profile of CBD, CBD derivatives, and terpenes guaranteed to provide the relief and benefits you need daily. Visit TrueHempScience.com to experience the best CBD oils, edibles, and topicals on the market today. And use code CURIOUS7 to save 7% off your entire purchase of $50 or more and get 2 25-milligram CBD cookies or brownies free. That website again is TrueHempScience.com and the code is CURIOUS7. Curious Realm Podcast is your source for the latest and greatest news and events in the world of the paranormal, esoteric, and forbidden knowledge. And there's no better way to spark the conversation than with items from the Curious Realm store. Choose from fan favorites like hoodies, mouse pads, coffee mugs, and more. Buy books and items from your favorite Curious Realm guests. Get your hands on the latest gear for paranormal investigations and experiments we discuss on the show. Open your web browser and stop on by the Curious Realm store at curiousrealm.com/store to buy the latest Curious Realm wear and out-of-this-world gifts for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com www.thebrainfarm.com/store. Have you considered starting a podcast? Looking for a way to make your business a voice of authority in an industry? Then Podcast Cadet is the solution for you. Whether starting a podcast for yourself, your brand, business, school, church, or just plain fun, Podcast Cadet is here to help you navigate the waters of the podcast industry. Specializing in one-on-one consultation and training with industry professionals in fields ranging from podcast technology and editing to distribution, monetization, and even social media strategies, Podcast Cadet tailors their services to the specific needs of you and your podcast. Do you already have a podcast and trying to find ways to engage and grow your audience? Sign up for your Podcast Cadet audit today. And let us help you explore new and exciting ways to leverage your content and elevate your podcast brand to whole new levels. From consultation and workshops to affordable podcast production and maintenance packages, Podcast Cadet is your one-stop shop for everything podcast-related on the internet. Visit PodcastCadet.com today to sign up for your consultation or training. And use code CURIOUS20 to save 20% off your entire purchase. That website, again, is podcastcadet.com. Welcome back from commercial. Thank you so much to all of our amazing sponsors out there. WebWorks Wireless, who has been our live streaming sponsor since the beginning of the show. They are also our streaming sponsor for all of our website live streams for things like the upcoming MUFON Symposium that is coming up here in a week or so. Our previous guest was just talking about that. That's going to be super great. We're also going to be going out to the International Remote Viewers Association, IRVA. We're going to be going out to that this month, brought to you by WebWorks Wireless as well. Thank you so much to our secondary sponsor for our live streams, The Secret to Everything. Stop on by, support Dr. Kimberly McGeorge. She is your number one source for alternative health, frequency healing, and consciousness expansion. Secretofeverything.com is the website. The website of our guest is J.L. Carpenter Law. Welcome back to the show, J.L. Carpenter. How are you doing today?
Thanks, Chris. Glad to be back.
I'm glad to have you back. This is a segment that when I decided to do it, I was like, number one, I need to have a lawyer on. Number two, I could not think of a better lawyer to have on because I think you break a few boundaries for a lot of people.
Thank you.
And you have a really great way of breaking these complex issues down into just really straight common knowledge. I was texting you back and forth before our recording session that for me, it's funny that these definitions of SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States, for those of you that don't know what that jumble of letters means that you see on TV all the time or hear people refer to, our segment here is about the Supreme Court and demystifying the Supreme Court, whether it be in your state, whether it be on the federal level. What is that all about? And what is it? So let's go ahead and start off here real quick. I will bring up the Constitution itself and the 10th Amendment, which is pretty important. That gets into the rights delegated to the United States by the Constitution, and those reserved for the states, and it specifically states, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively. Now, explain to us in common lingo there, JL, what that would mean.
All right. So it all starts with the United States Constitution that these wise men many, many years ago got together and wrote so that people could come to a country and live in freedom and liberty and have property not taken from them and enjoy life. And so with the Constitution, you have the separation of powers. Got Article 1, which gives power to the legislature or Congress, you know, the House and the Senate, to make laws. You have Article 2, which is the executive branch, the president. That person is supposed to enforce the laws. And then you have Article 3, the judiciary, and they are to interpret the laws. And the Supreme Court of the United States is the Supreme Court of the land. It is the court of last resort. And to get there, it could be because there's two states that have an argument and they need the Supreme Court to make a call on their argument, or through an appellate process. And with the decision that was handed down this past week that reversed Roe versus Wade, that was through the appellate process. So it started in a state court and then it made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court has discretion on what they want to hear. They don't have to take on and hear every case. In fact, they only take a handful of cases. I think it's like 7,000 that they are petitioned with every year, or something to that effect, and they only take 100 or 200.
Yeah, and I've actually got the Supreme Court rulings for the year, or decisions rather. It's not really rulings. Because what the Supreme Court does specifically is interpret the law as the Constitution states it. So it's funny because I think a lot of people, and of course, do not get me wrong, folks, despite any religious background I might have, anything like that, America by definition is choice. Period. Like, That's kind of the whole point of America.
Right, was so that we weren't suppressed or oppressed. Yeah. You know, and I forgot to add, though, those great wise men also said, you know, the Constitution's great, but I think we need to add 10 amendments.
Yes.
And those were what we call the Bill of Rights. And you're right. It was the 10th Amendment that said, okay, whatever is not written here in this Constitution is not your power. That goes back to the states. And that is the crux of how come Roe v. Wade was reversed or overturned this past week.
Precisely. And you know, that's exactly what Alito's decision on it was the fact that this should be something that should be decided on a state-by-state basis according to the Constitution. Now, If somebody, as I've said in a few social media posts, wants to go schoolhouse rock on this thing and go to the House of Representatives and put forth the articles to put in a bill to make a federal law to guarantee these rights. And I guess that's really my big issue, is I'm always down with demystifying so that people understand either the legal process, the process of putting in a witness report, whatever, you know, and I think a lot of people hear these things, hear them in the media, and immediately jump gun, JL.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I mean,
go ahead.
You would have thought that the whole world had just ended. I mean, the way that I saw young girls, and men, I mean, everybody who saw this decision, and it was as if abortion was completely taken off the table. No more abortion in the United States. You know, how dare you, you old white men on the Supreme Court? How do you don't have a uterus? And that's great for political divide and whatever. And it doesn't matter necessarily which party you're from. If you go right back to where you started at the Constitution and you understand the legal argument on how they got to where they got, but you know, they gave that right back to the state. So now the local voters in each state have control over that issue.
Yeah, yeah, precisely. And you know, it is this issue of states' rights. And that's kind of, once again, what the decision said was that we aren't here to make a decision on that. It's not our place to do that. It's not even the Constitution's place to do that until you make it such.
Right.
And yeah, it really does. I think a few of the decisions that the Supreme Court has just put out, and there are a few of them in the past just little bit. One of them was West Virginia versus the EPA. Congress did not grant the EPA in Section 111D of the Clean Air Act the authority to devise emission caps based on generation shifting approach to the agency took in the Clean Power Plan. And basically what that means is, once again, hey, if you want to regulate them beyond the means of the federal regulations that are there, which they may very well need those sanctions, you have to go to Congress and you have to have those regulations changed. They are the ones who regulate that.
That's right, because they have the power to create law. So if you want a federal law about abortion rights, then that is Congress's job. It has to be done in the legislature.
Yeah, precisely. And that is the exact argument that I've made. And once again, I stand with anybody's choice. You know, I kind of follow that old philosophic rule of I will defend your right to the death because it's your right. You know, I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend your right to say it.
My 22-year-old son had asked me, so how is this different? You know, with gun rights. And I said, well, because the Second Amendment addresses gun rights, but there's no mention of abortion in the Constitution. In fact, when the Constitution was drafted, I believe that most states had laws on the books against abortion, that it was a crime. So the argument, even Ruth Bader Ginsburg had said, this is going to be an issue coming down the pike. And we have been watching this for about 20 years. She knew the vulnerability based on the Roe v. Wade decision.
Yeah.
But all of the Supreme Court decisions or opinions that have come down in the last week go back to the fundamental, we're going to stick to what the Constitution says. And that is how they are interpreting the law, which is their job to interpret the law.
Precisely. And it's so scary sometimes, JL, from both sides of the fence, because you're very much like me. You pretty well toe a middle line, and have friends on both sides of the aisle, you know, and it's so hard for me not to just go, did we all just forget? We're all the same age. Did we just forget that the bill was sitting on Capitol Hill? You know, that is the legislative process, that is the process. I can't even show too much of that clip because I don't want Facebook to stop the feed. but I had to show the bill on Capitol Hill because, there is a separation of powers set up by the Constitution on purpose and for a reason. If the separation of powers didn't exist, then, you know, even the check of right now, the point that I have made with people is everybody who has a representative, if this is something that you believe in and believe is a fundamental right of people, call your House of Representatives representative for your local district. Ask them how they have voted on it. You can look it up, how they voted on it. And you could probably look up straw polls for the area recently to see what the constituency says. And if they don't vote the way the constituency says, vote them out. Just go fire.
Yeah, because they're supposed
literally
to represent you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, something interesting I wanted to bring to your attention, Chris, I don't know if you realize this, but I said that you get to the Supreme Court in one of two ways, and one of them being through an appeal process or an appellate process. Mm. So it was this Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case that came out of Mississippi, because what happened was the state legislature makes law in Mississippi, said, hey, we're going to enact this Gestational AIDS Act, which said no more abortions after 15 weeks. They had one abortion clinic, and that abortion clinic, Jackson Women's Health Organization, said, we're not going to stand for that, so we're going to file a lawsuit. And then that lawsuit made its way through the appeals process, and it was the abortion clinic filing that lawsuit that landed in the Supreme Court. That was what overturned Roe v. Wade. The other thing is that a lot of folks I saw on social media, especially the young ones, were calling the new justices on the court liars, saying that in their confirmation hearings that they said they recognized that Roe v. Wade is precedent. But then they overturned it, and so they were calling them liars. They don't think that they understand the legal distinction that at that time, Roe v. Wade was president, and they would have to follow whatever that precedent was at that time. Now, they would be asked questions about how they might rule on cases in the future, but a smart candidate is going to say, I'm not going to speculate. I'm not going to say how I might or may not, you know, because they don't have all the facts in front of them. But that doesn't mean that once they're confirmed and on the bench, that a new case, such as Dobbs, doesn't come up all the way to the Supreme Court and change precedent. And a good example of that is that Plessy versus Ferguson was case law that basically allowed constitutionally allowed segregation of race. But Brown versus Board of Education was able to change that precedent and overturn it. That's so that right. There was no racial segregation.
That's right.
So it's just a natural progression of how our cases make their way up to the Supreme Court.
Well, precisely. And the fact of, yes, court opinion changes, legal definition changes, as laws are added and things are changed. Like at the time of, we didn't have the definition of domestic terrorism. We didn't have the definition of racial hate. In a legal sense.
Right.
You know, we didn't, and that decision put forth and set the legal precedent for the laws that were passed, you know, and for amendments that were written. So,
right.
And I think that's really the cogent point that you're making, is that we should not, all of these politicians, both sides included, folks, who run on a pro-choice platform, once again, go back and look up their record. If they haven't voted for it or put something forth, hold their feet to the fire and ask them why. Because they have quite literally let women's rights dangle on the participle of a justice decision. It's so entirely horrifying to me to know that, like, yes, this what they call a right, and I say it in air quotes, folks, because until it's written there and until it's law, it's just a legal precedent. You know.
And, well, and another illustration of the Supreme Court making sure that they stick to the Constitution in their opinion or their decision was the Coaches case that you you and I had talked about, Coach Joseph Kennedy in Washington, football coach, who was exercising silent prayer on the 50-yard line, and the school district didn't appreciate that, and so he was fired and he filed a lawsuit, and that worked its way up to the Supreme Court. And that decision or opinion came out this week where they said the Constitution and the best of our traditions counsel mutual respect and tolerance, not censorship and suppression for religious and non-religious views alike.
Right.
And the point being is that he has a First Amendment right protected in the Constitution, free exercise and free speech clause. and, that he can take that time if it's not on the clock, and he wasn't on the clock necessarily.
That's right. That's right. And you know, it disturbs me when I hear people, because the one reason why I wanted to address that one was because, of course, that's where everybody jumps in and says separation of church and state. And you really do have to back up and go, whoa. Hold the big phone. Because that is not what separation of church and state means. Separation of church and state means that a fascist regime cannot be put in place, and the church cannot be the government, and the government can't be the church, and the government can't tell you where to go to church or how to go to church.
That's right. And I think it was Justice Neil Gorsuch that wrote the majority opinion. But one of the things, just like you said, was he said here, a government entity sought to punish an individual for engaging in a brief, quiet, personal religious observance, doubly protected by the free exercise and free speech clauses of the First Amendment. And also in this scenario, you know, he did this privately and players then came to him and wanted to engage also, but that was not required. He didn't ask them to, he didn't order them to, it was not required.
That's right. It was not a requirement of being on the team, not a requirement of being on the field, not a requirement of anything involved. It was whoever wants to come hop on this, feel free. We're going to take a knee real quick. You could take a knee to the east if you want to. Doesn't matter, but we're going to come observe a quiet knee over here, and that's what this is for. And I think because, like, we graduated from the same high school. We went to high school together. And I remember when it became the norm that we had a designated classroom that was where our Muslim graduating friends and underclassmen and things like that could go to at lunchtime.
Right.
And pray to the East. And that was not a common thing. It was not everywhere. And it was something that was a point of consternation for some people. And I remember that. And it's like, wow, you know, that's kind of, I think, what people are forgetting when they jump to the separation of church and state. And it's, the coach wasn't telling anybody in school how to pray, what to pray to, anything like that. It's the fact of he has the right to exercise his right to religion, even in a public place, even in a public school. So, and much the same way that any student has the right to go to that designated prayer room and go practice the prayer that they need to. So,
but I think you make a really great point, Chris, in that if folks out here don't like the laws as they're being decided, then change the law.
Yeah.
And to effectuate change, you have to be active, get in touch with your local representative, your senators, and let your voice be heard, and of course vote. But you can't jump on this, you know, social media wave and believe everything you hear and see, because I promise you, most of what's out there is not even the fundamental truth of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Nor is it the actual legal interpretation of what's going on. And note, once again, folks, in every single one of these decisions, SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, either says, we refer you to Constitution Part whatever, or we refer you to the to Amendment 10, which says that's up to the states. But one of the two. There are very few of these decisions where I'm not going to say that it's not groundbreaking, that it's not a precedent-setting moment, but it's by precedent that law is supposed to be broached. And once again, the question is, why has every one of these representatives literally run on a legal precedent? Why have we let them is what we have to question, you know?
Right.
And why does the true misunderstanding It's kind of a scary point when you think about the number of people who are utterly forgetting that it may be like an eighth or ninth grade point of government learning, that there is a separation of powers and that that separation exists for a reason.
I mean, it's the basis of our democracy. We would not have had the long-lasting democracy that we have in the United States had we not had the separation of powers in the, you know, the legislative, executive, and the judicial branches. And it's a checks and balances. I mean, we remember growing up hearing that in our government classes, checks and balances. Yeah. And that's the way it should be.
And you know, even that, the fact that, you know, democracy is the democratic process. That is a form of voting. Republic. Mm-hmm. We are a representative republic. And I think that when you say that, it gives it a little bit more power. Once again, people have confused that fact. People have forgotten that one is not like you could lose all democracy and still have a representative republic. You know,
right.
I mean, and that's exactly why it states in the 10th Amendment are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Because because there's a really, really big concept out there called. It just left my head. The Congress of States, I think it is. Where basically we can call a halt to the federal government and everything goes back to a state government until we can all come together and renegotiate things.
Yeah, hopefully we won't reach that point. But, I think it's interesting because you hear a lot of conversation about packing the court or adding more justices to the court. And so we've had since the United States was born, we have had a couple of different numbers of justices on the Supreme Court. But since the Civil War era, we have had 9 justices, and that's, you know, 1 chief justice and 8 associates. And I think that an odd number is necessary because it's the tiebreaker, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's the convention of states. Sorry. But yeah, and right now there's, we are pretty close to 50% of states having signed that through, where it's like we gotta renegotiate things and figure this out. Because yeah, once again, people have lost that grassroots aspect. JL, they mm-hmm. have forgotten that they are the ones with the power, not just the voting power, but the monetary power.
You know what I think also is that as you and I were growing up, I don't know about your folks, but, you know, my mom would take me as a child down to the local elementary on the Tuesdays that she was going to vote. And I would stand next to her. You know, I remember standing next to her legs in the voting booth while she did what she needed to do in the voting booth. And I was just a curious child, and I would see a neighbor and I'd say, "So who did you vote for?" And she would say, "That is so rude. You don't ever ask someone who they voted for. That is a personal choice. You don't ever ask that question." But because of social media now, everyone wants to talk about who they support, and there's all this promotion. But just in the last week that Roe v. Wade was reversed to allow the states to make their own laws about that issue, look at how many people have come out, celebrities on social media, announcing that they have had abortions and telling their own story about that.
Yes.
And that's their right. And, you know, that's their life. And I'm not saying, you know, one way or another, that's a personal choice.
Absolutely.
But that's not something that we would have shared publicly before social media.
No, not really. There were a few crusaders out there. I work very much in the field of corporate AV, and, you know, a lot of people have had a lot to say about some of the jobs that I've had, not just like as a producer, but punched buttons for. And it's like, man, You know, if I got emotionally involved or morally tied to every show that I punch buttons for, I wouldn't be punching buttons, Jack.
Right.
You know, and there does have to be kind of that. And that I look at the topic very much in, as sadly and callous as this may sound, very much in a calculating legal way. I believe in everybody's choice. Doesn't matter. America is choice. And if there's a law about it, great. If not, maybe we need to make a law about it. Go through the process and make a law.
And if you don't like the law, if there is one, then effectuate change.
That's right. There is a means by which to effectuate change. There is a means by which to revoke laws and rights. We have done that before. We've gone through and we have stricken down the right to alcohol publicly.
Yep.
With that was the 22nd Amendment, if I'm not mistaken. And then repealed it because a few years later we had like mass casualties across the country and people dying from bathtub gin and things like that. So yeah.
But my daughter and I were talking about that not too long ago. And I said, no extreme ever works. Life should be all about moderation.
That's right. And that's what's interesting is that, we are a country of, I mean, there's no doubt, like we were founded by people that were extreme, that took it to the extreme of, you know what, if we got to leave, all right.
So we're going to do it our way.
Yeah. And even, you know, we make the ratio on this show all the time, JL, 80-20. And the whole reason that we use that ratio is because the roots of this show are the idea of what started the American Revolution. A bunch of people that lived different lifestyles, different grades of life, but they all went to the pub. Mm-hmm. Didn't matter if they were the pig farmer or the mayor or, you know, somebody who was a landholder for Britain. We all went to the pub and... oddly enough, we all agreed on that and that we didn't want it.
Right.
But only 20% or less of the standing populace of America took place in that revolution. The other 80% pointed and went, you're a whack job. Stop this. And now we live in the comfort of a 20% of whack jobs.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, that hard-fought constitution... That hard-fought separation of powers that exists because of the wisdom of a bunch of people that were raised under the oppression of something different.
You know, and also I would like to say, when I talk about effectuating change, I'm talking about through legal means.
Absolutely.
Whether you're conservative or whether you're liberal, shaming somebody who is a public figure who doesn't have the same ideology as you, or stalking them, threatening, harassing, death threats, insulting them while they're having dinner. All of that kind of behavior is not helpful to either side or to our country as a whole. And, you know, I currently reside in Friendswood. They announced the Grand Marshal for a 4th of July parade, a woman who was the graduating class from 2001 and had an extensive military career, an impressive one. She also, when she was at Friendswood High School, took our girls soccer team in 2001 to state championship and won, she and her team. So she had a lot of impressive qualities, and that is why the steering committee had elected for her to be our grand marshal in our 4th of July parade in Friendswood, small town. However, she had some political beliefs that not everybody in the community agreed with. And so somehow the story had gotten leaked to a cable news network nationwide. And the next thing you know, she's receiving threats and she decided to step down from being grand marshal in our parade this year. We're not going to have one. Yeah.
What? You're not going to have a parade, or you're not going to have a grand marshal?
We're not going to have a grand marshal.
That is.
So that's the first time ever in Friendswood parade history that we won't. And this my is all point
because
is,
of somebody's political leaning?
Yes.
Wow.
And, you know, and quite honestly, I don't even know which political party she's with. I just know that some of the statements that she made had gone against what others believed. And so I don't think that the threats came from our local city community. I know we have a very fantastic police chief who is Johnny on the spot when it comes to investigating those types of things, and we get that under control. I think when it was leaked to a national cable network that people who don't even know our community were the ones that were making these threats. But the point is that whether it's, you know, you're conservative and you don't care for the liberals, or you're a liberal and you don't care for the conservatives, that is not the way to effectuate change.
Yes.
And we need to get some level, some sense and level of respect and compassion and empathy back for each other in this community, because I don't know how we're ever going to overcome the divide that's in this country if we can't get back to a level of respect.
Yes. To quite literally a level of my fence is where it ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
Like what happens beyond my fence? Okay. You know, and everybody looking in at my fence should be whatever happens beyond that fence. Okay. You know,
and Nate, maybe if we didn't all express, you know, our beliefs so vocally and on social media, and we did just keep it within our fence, and let our credentials stand for themselves, then there wouldn't be that kind of tearing apart of each other.
You know, and I find it very interesting because when I had you on last, was it last time or the time before that you were physically here in the studio with your son?
Time before.
Okay. Because I found it very interesting that he is pretty well devoid of social media presence, minus a couple platforms, you know?
That's true.
And that is not the only youth that I know like that. That is like, nah, not really for me. And
right.
It's really, really interesting because, of course, our generation is the one that birthed this whole thing, and it's interesting to see how our parents respond to it, and how the generation after responds to it, and how the generation after that is responding. Now, with that being said, it's I want to kind of switch gears for a second. A surprise topic here. As a defense lawyer, where do you stand on the Ghislaine Maxwell verdict and on the R. Kelly verdict, both of them?
You know, with Maxwell, I think that 20 years is an appropriate amount of time based on what I know. And of course, you know how I always feel. If I'm not in the courtroom hearing the evidence myself, but based on what I know and what her range of punishment was and what the state was asking for, given her age and her role, I think that 20 years is appropriate. I think it's unfortunate that these victims don't feel like they were able to really truly have their day in court with the true perpetrator in their, you know, in their allegation of Jeffrey Epstein. And I was worried that because there was no Epstein for them to have their day in court with, that Maxwell was really going to be taken out on her unfairly. So I tend to think that 20 years was appropriate if she was convicted of the allegations, and she was. So, but on R. Kelly, I did not see the verdict on that one.
Yeah, as far as I know, I want to say it was 30 years. Is
I did
what
watch the documentary. Which was
pretty rough, let's just say. Yes, he was sentenced, as a matter of fact, to 30 years in prison. Now, for federal racketeering and sex trafficking. Now, Granted, here's my issue. Number one, there was way more than one count, especially with Ghislaine Maxwell.
Mm-hmm.
Way more than one count. Really, the way I stand on it is truly the only way that she got that literal sweetheart of a deal is she had to have given up some names.
You know, I kind of felt like
to do so.
I think it would be willing to do so, but I really feel like if that was the case, it would have already happened pre-trial, and we wouldn't have necessarily had a trial. There are other ways that these victims could have been made whole through negotiating. There's often times where the government and the defendant can reach some sort of pre-negotiation, make sure that it's okay with the victims that are involved, and then still allow those victims to come and testify in a courtroom, what's called a victim impact statement, where they can testify as to how the behavior has impacted their life. Mm. And at least at that point, they can be heard and experience that closure if it helps.
Yeah.
And so I think that if she was going to give up names, and she might have, but I don't know, I think it would have been done pre-trial.
And once again, quite possibly the source of what I would call a sweetheart deal for the number of counts facing her. I'm of the opinion, especially when it comes to human trafficking, sex trafficking, things like that, that is a law that needs like big teeth, like, you know, a good 50 to 75 years per count. Type of big teeth. So to know that there were so many counts against her and yet still it came up to 20, while R. Kelly ended up with 30. And granted, especially when you go through and watch the documentary and see the, as I facepalm myself, just the crazy things that some of these families went through.
I know.
So
I can't even imagine. So that, I mean,
because they were sold something as well. And when things went south, it's just unbelievable. Wild, crazy stuff.
I honestly think 30 years is light for all of his behavior.
Yes. Yes. And like I said, anything involving human trafficking, sex trafficking, those need to be laws that we have that have big teeth to them per count.
Yeah.
Because R. Kelly was once again another one where he was facing numerous counts of this. There was more than one person that he did this to. And when you're talking about Ghislaine Maxwell, it was once again somebody that was facing a lot of counts that really, truly interesting. And that is another one that, yes, I think that we need to take to the federal level and start passing some harsher human trafficking laws and be a lot clearer about that definition of human trafficking.
That's the key. That's the key, because remember, at our state level, we have laws on the books to protect from sexual assault, aggravated sexual assault. And then we have the Romeo Juliet law that says, okay, if you're at least within 3 years of each other, 15, 17 year olds, then it's not statutory rape. Yeah. But how many folks out there are having to register as sex offenders for something that, you know, 20 years ago was not against the law? Or, my in-laws, my mother-in-law is going to be 90. My father-in-law just recently passed away. But when they started dating and she was 15 and I think he was 19, that would have been against the law today.
Oh, absolutely.
He would have been a registered sex offender, you know?
And that's just it. Like, if back then, if you were 18 and you were unmarried, if you were 21 and you were unmarried, families had questions.
Right.
You know, it was like, wow, man, we don't know if we're going to be able to we don't know if we're going to be able to pawn Margaret off on anybody.
It's true, but definition is key.
Wonderful. Yeah. And that's just it. And talking about definition, to know that JL, until we were kids, like 3-4 years old, till 1978, there were eugenics laws.
Mm-hmm.
And about 40% of states still. Where
that's
if
right.
you were under a certain IQ and the state knew, you were just sterilized.
Yeah.
And that is disturbing. Disturbing. And those are the things that the Supreme Court hears. These are the things to go back to that.
Just 'cause life and liberty.
I mean, these things I had you on, I didn't want to not address them while I had a defense attorney on, because these are huge cases that once again are landmark and will be definite decision making cases. Like the fact that we got Ghislaine Maxwell to begin with, and that she lived through her process to go mm-hmm. through trial and to be sentenced, is amazing and landmark. That is a shark of unusual size, let's just say, or probably a rodent of unusual size, to use the term. But these are the things that actively change the law.
I would say one more thing on the Roe v. Wade matter. Mm-hmm. Part of the stress about the recent decision is that folks are worried about the other line of cases that were decided along that line. So the Casey case, yes. But you know, it goes to your right of privacy, the right to use contraceptives in your bedroom or in your marriage. And so I think that because things yeah. developed out of that line of cases, such as same-sex marriages, that folks are very nervous that because Roe was overturned, what's next? And so I feel in my heart a sense of peace that all that this opinion is saying is it's not constitutional, it's not a constitutional right. We're going to send this back to the states where it belongs. That this was decided poorly or wrong the first time around, and sure. let's send it back to the states where it belongs. But I feel like my friends that enjoy same-sex marriage rights, I don't see that the court's going to affect that right of privacy, not out of this.
No, I don't see them going back. And even if at that point, JL, once again, that marriage license is issued on a state-by-state basis. There is no exactly. federal marriage license. So that is up exactly. to the state to begin with. All that the court ever said was that the state has the right to choose whether or not to issue a same-sex marriage permit.
And it's not like the Supreme Court can wake up one morning and say, hey, guys, today let's decide we're going to overturn whatever. No. You know, it has to come up appeal.
That's right. They don't like have a text party on a Tuesday night and then wake up, go get Starbucks and come in on Wednesday and change things. That's not how right. this 9-person panel works.
And that's exactly why I wanted to be on your podcast about this yes. issue, is because I was seeing all of this information coming out into these young Same. Minds through social media. And I was like, but that's not how it works. That's not the law. That's not what the Constitution says. That's not what the opinion says.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to have the opportunity to use your platform to maybe clear up some of those misunderstandings.
Well, and that's why I wanted to have you on. Even when I told my wife that, like, I'm going to have JL on to talk about this, she was like, well, are you sure? Man, that's a big tater, honey. I was like, I know, but I'm not even covering it from a pro-choice, pro-life perspective. I am covering it from a pro-constitution, pro-law perspective. I firmly support how the literal geniuses who wrote our Constitution
Yeah.
I mean, even to this day, the fact that once again, the Supreme Court has said, House of Representatives, do your job. Go forth. Do it. Write the law. Right. Regulate things. That's what you're there for. And folks, if you are pro-choice in that way, go to your local representative. Tell them to write a law. And if they don't, vote otherwise. Period. Mm-hmm. That's what our system is. That is the beautiful system of checks and balances that we have set up with that other people strive for the world over.
That's right. And if we don't preserve it to pass it on to the next generation, it won't be here for our grandkids and their kids. And and that's the key.
It really is, JL. And the fact of, trying to get people to once again understand these things that we get caught up in common vernacular. Mm-hmm. We get caught up and swept. Even that fine line definition that I was saying earlier between a representative republic and a democracy. Yes, we're a democracy. That is a form of voting, though.
Yeah,
you're
right.
And people forget that you as the person who hires the representative have the power. These people are your employee. Quite
That's
literally,
right.
If you told an employee for the last 50 years that he should probably do something for you and he didn't, would you still have an employee?
Nope.
Because some of these people, a dude that holds a really big office included, have run with this thing in their back pocket, ladies, for the last 50 years. Since this decision, they've held office and used it as a running point and used you and your rights as a running point.
Yep.
And that's horrifying that they have done nothing to actively secure that. Yet now they will gladly throw their arms up in consternation and try to light things ablaze because of it.
Right.
So,
and throw out what we've established as tradition and say we need to add more justices to the court when they fail to do their job, which is to make the law.
Yeah.
All the judicial branch does is interpret the laws that they make. And if you didn't make a law that, on this issue, in 50 years of sitting in Congress,
that's right,
you need to be fired.
Yeah, we cannot live our lives or guarantee our rights by the precipice of a legal precedent.
Right.
Period. We have been, quote, guaranteeing these rights on the precipice of a legal precedent. And I would say if we do not secure Roe v. Wade, then we need to move down the line and we need to secure on a state-by-state basis, if need be, gay marriage rights, all these other things that came as a result of, and once again, folks, wherever you stand religiously, I don't care if you listen to a man with a collar or if you believe in the use of a hijab, I really don't care. America is choice with a capital C, straight up. That is what we are about. To say otherwise is to me is just anathema and is totally against the Constitution. So go out there, take it to your representatives, folks. Take it to your local people. Hold their feet to the fire. These are the moments that steal us as a society. And JL, I want to thank you so much for always coming on, taking on hard topics like this, because it's not an easy one to talk about, even as a lady. Like I as a man, other than claiming the right of a single mother son, I have no leg to stand on. None, JL, none. I am a man. This law in all right does not affect me one lick.
I just want to say, like we started, it all starts with the Constitution and getting back to the basics. We're all connected as citizens of the United States of America and in this community, in society. Let's get back to the basics. let's look at the Constitution. The wise men wrote, you know, many, many moons ago for us that has lasted for so long. Understand the checks and balances of the three branches of law and effectuate change with respect and not with disrespect and hate. Let's learn to have compassion towards each other and respect each other's difference of opinions. And maybe we don't need to be so vocal about our personal opinions and post it all over social media, but maybe we should just take those deep-seated compassions or passions and take them to our representatives, take it to the voting booth, but treat each other with love and respect and understand what is being done by our branches of government.
Yes, absolutely. I could not say it better. JL, thank you so much, as always, for coming on, for helping clear up the halls of justice and how we understand them. Please do let everybody know, before we let you go, where they can go to procure your services if they are in need of a lawyer, where they can go to follow you, everything else.
Thanks, Chris. My website is jlcarpenterlaw.com, jlcarpenterlaw.com. We typically practice Harris County, Galveston County, Fort Bend, Brazoria, and now we're taking cases in Travis County and the surrounding areas of Austin.
Fantastic. I am so glad to hear that you have moved into our surrounding areas. JL, thank you so much again for your time. Please do hold the line while we close things out. While you are online checking out everything from JL Carpenter, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is the website, folks. That is where you can go to find all of our episodes. That's where you can go to find all of our coverage for the amazing upcoming MUFON Symposium in Denver, Colorado, as well as the IRVA, the International Remote Viewers Association Conference, coming to you out of California. We will have some great live coverage there. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault on our website, CuriousRealm.com. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast services, as well as YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and Apple TV through the APR TV app, available on all app markets. Curious Realm is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more great content, or to become a sponsor of Curious Realm or other podcasts, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.